Chapter 49. Find never a suitable rhyme for web, otherwise the brigade should have had a place in the poet's verses. And D for you, you are but a lieutenant, says Addison, and the muse can't occupy herself with any gentleman under the rank of a field officer. Mr. Boyle was all impatient to hear, saying that my Lord Treasurer and my Lord Halifax were equally anxious. And Addison, blushing, began reading of his verses, and, I suspect, knew their weak parts as well as the most critical ear. When he came to the lines describing the angel that inspired repulsed battalions to engage, and taught the doubtful battle where to rage, he read with great animation, looking at Esmond, as much as to say, you know where that simile came from our talk, and our bottle of Burgundy, the other day. The poet's two ears were caught with enthusiasm, and applauded the verses with all their might. The gentlemen of the court sprang up in great delight. Add a word more, my dear sir, says he. Trust me with the papers, I'll defend them with my life. Let me read them over to my Lord Treasurer, whom I am appointed to see in half an hour. I venture to promise, the verses shall lose nothing by my reading, and then, sir, we shall see whether Lord Halifax has a right to complain that his friend's pension is no longer paid. And without more ado, the courtier in lace seized the manuscript pages, placed them in his breast with his ruffled hand over his heart, executed a most gracious wave of the hat with the disengaged hand, and smiled and bowed out of the room, leaving an odor of pomander behind him. Does not the chamber look quite dark? Says Addison, surveying it, after the glorious appearance and disappearance of that gracious messenger. Why, he illuminated the whole room. Your scarlet, Mr. Esmond, will bear any light. But this threadbare old coat of mine, how very worn it looked under the glare of that splendor. I wonder whether they will do anything for me, he continued. When I came out of Oxford into the world, my patrons promised me great things, and you see where their promises have landed me, in a lodging up two pair of stairs, with a sixpenny dinner from the cook's shop. Well, I suppose this promise will go after the others, and fortune will jilt me, as the jade has been doing any time these 7 years. I puff the prostitute away, says he, smiling, and blowing a cloud out of his pipe. Here is no hardship in poverty, Esmond, that is not bearable, no hardship even in honest dependence, that an honest man may not put up with. I came out of the lap of Alma Mater, puffed up with her praises of me, and thinking to make a figure in the world with the parts and learning which had got me no small name in our college. The world is the ocean, and Isis and Charwell are but little drops, of which the sea takes no account. My reputation ended a mile beyond Magdalen Tower, no one took note of me, and I learned this at least, to bear up against evil fortune with a cheerful heart. Friend Dick hath made a figure in the world, and has passed me in the race long ago. What matters a little name or a little fortune? There is no fortune that a philosopher cannot endure. I have been not unknown as a scholar, and yet forced to live by turning bear leader, and teaching a boy to spell. What then? The life was not pleasant, but possible the bear was bearable. Should this venture fail, I will go back to Oxford. And some day, when you are a general, you shall find me a curate in a cassock and bands, and I shall welcome your honor to my cottage in the country, and to a mug of penny ale. 'Tis not poverty that's the hardest to bear, or the least happy lot in life, says Mr. Addison, shaking the ash out of his pipe. My pipe is smoked out. Shall we have another bottle? I have still a couple in the cupboard, and of the right sort. No more? Let us go abroad and take a turn on the mall, or look in at the theater, and see Dick's comedy. 'Tis not a masterpiece of wit, but Dick is a good fellow, though he doth not set the Thames on fire. Within a month after this day, Mr. Addison's ticket had come up a prodigious prize in the lottery of life. All the town was in an uproar of admiration of his poem, The Campaign, which Dick Steele was spouting at every coffee house in Whitehall and Covent Garden. The wits on the other side of Temple Bar saluted him at once as the greatest poet the world had seen for ages. The people huzzed for Marlborough and for Addison, and, more than this, the party in power provided for the meritorious poet, and Addison got the appointment of Commissioner of Excise, which the famous Mr. Locke vacated, and rose from this place to other dignities and honors. His prosperity from henceforth to the end of his life, being scarce ever interrupted. But I doubt whether he was not happier in his garret in the Haymarket than ever he was in his splendid palace at Kensington. And I believe the fortune that came to him in the shape of the Countess his wife was no better than a shrew and a vixen. Gay as the town was, 'twas but a dreary place for Mr. Esmond, whether his charmer was in or out of it, and he was glad when his general gave him notice that he was going back to his division of the army which lay in winter quarters at Bois-le-Duc. His dear mistress bade him farewell with a cheerful face, her blessing he knew he had always, and wheresoever fate carried him. Mistress Beatrix was away in attendance on Her Majesty at Hampton Court, and kissed her fair fingertips to him, by way of adieu, when he rode thither to take his leave. She received her kinsman in a waiting room, where there were half a dozen more ladies of the court, so that his high-flown speeches, had he intended to make any, and very likely he did, were impossible. And she announced to her friends that her cousin was going to the army in as easy a manner as she would have said he was going to a chocolate house. He asked with a rather rueful face if he had any orders for the army, and she was pleased to say that she would like a mantle of Mechlin lace. She made him a saucy curtsy in reply to his own dismal bow. She deigned to kiss her fingertips from the window, where she stood laughing with the other ladies, and chanced to see him as he made his way to the Oi. The Dowager at Chelsea was not sorry to part with him this time. On sure, thou seest Christ come on sermon, she did him the honor to say to him, indeed, gentlemen in his condition are by no means amusing companions, and besides, the fickle old woman had now found a much more amiable favorite, and raffled for her darling lieutenant of the guard. Frank remained behind for a while, and did not join the army till later, in the suite of his grace the commander-in-chief. His dear mother, on the last day before Esmond went away, and when the three dined together, made Esmond promise to befriend her boy, and besought Frank to take the example of his kinsman, as of a loyal gentleman and brave soldier, so she was pleased to say, and at parting, betrayed not the least sign of faltering or weakness, though, God knows, that fond heart was fearful enough when others were concerned, though so resolute in bearing its own pain. Esmond's general embarked at Harwich. 'Twas a grand sight to see Mr. Webb dressed in scarlet on the deck, waving his hat as our yacht put off, and the gun saluted from the shore. Harry did not see his Viscount again, until 3 months after, at Bois-le-Duc, when His Grace the Duke came to take the command, and Frank brought a budget of news from home. How he had supped with this actress, and got tired of that. How he had got the better of Mr. St. John, both over the bottle, and with Mrs. Mountford, of the Haymarket Theatre, a veteran charmer of 50, with whom the young scapegrace chose to fancy himself in love, how his sister was always at her tricks, and had jilted a young baron for an old earl. Can't make out Beatrix, he said. She cares for none of us, she only thinks about herself. She is never happy, unless she is quarreling. But as for my mother, Harry, is an angel. Harry tried to impress on the young fellow the necessity of doing everything in his power to please that angel, not to drink too much, not to go into debt, not to run after the pretty Flemish girls, and so forth, as became a senior speaking to a lad. But Lord bless thee, the boy said, I may do what I like, and I know she will love me all the same. And so, indeed, he did what he liked. Everybody spoiled him, and his grave kinsman as much as the rest. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.